And welcome back to Success Made Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This show is brought to you by Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, America's favorite encouragement, thinking of you, and sympathy greeting cards. You can go to gracefully-yours.com today. And if you plug in the word book with the letter 3, you'll get 25% off any of their greeting cards, courtesy of Success Made to Last. Hey, on today's show is a very special author. Her name is Laureen Carey. She's written a book called Lady Sitting, My Year with Nana at the End of Her Century. Laureen is a University of Pennsylvania lecturer and social advocate. And from cherished moments of weekends she spent as a child with her indulgent Nana to the reality of the years she spent lady sitting with her frail grandmother, Laureen journeys through stories of their time together in 5 generations of their African American family. We think it was brilliantly written as a narrative, and it shows a complicated yet transformative relationship of Nana, who is this fierce, stubborn business owner and also a very highly independent woman, who happened to manage that business up until she was 100 years old. Carey wrote about it, the reckonings to come, and wrote about Nana as a tour de force. Laureen, welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let's start with this, Laureen. Why were you motivated to write this narrative about Nana?
Oh, I'll tell you, I was unable not to write it. I write fiction mostly for books. I've written one memoir, and for me, memoir happens when you get, as a writer, sort of an eruption of a need to understand something better. And it's something that I couldn't explore any other way. I felt like I didn't understand what had happened between Nana and myself, with the family. Also, this is what we're meant to think about death. We're living people. It was her end of life. Part of our job is to usher babies into the world and to help people leave it. And I couldn't get through my grief any other way.
Well, it's truly a beautiful story, but it's also very complicated. We saw that Nana was being transformed, but we also saw that you were being changed by this whole experience. Tell us a little bit more detail about how you were changed by lady sitting.
Thank you so much. Besides the life lesson of tech, doing this reminded me of spending hours going through the old Radio Shack and Best Buy and finding earphones and a microphone that we would talk to Nana through, so that she could hear us, going to a low vision eye clinic, getting glasses and really high intensity lights, understanding what tech helped her, what tech didn't. But also, I realized that my ability to absorb grief, and it's so important now with COVID raging through us, is that we all have more grief going on than we can process. My husband is an Episcopal priest. We have rituals. We need each other. We need rituals to handle all of the feelings that rush through ourselves and our communities because of loss. So when you asked me before about writing this book, the reason I wrote it was to understand this stuff. But the reason you publish it, I mean, you talked to people when I was coming on about writing journals. Writing journals and a first draft is to understand it. Why you give it to other people is to be company with them, to bear witness as they go through what they go through.
Well, that is brilliant. Lorraine, one of the ongoing topics of this network is about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And I have this theory that we humans may flourish longer because we have a very specific purpose and intention. Tell us about how that might relate to Nana and the business that she ran.
My grandmother's father was a man who escaped or left. He didn't escape. He left the South once Reconstruction sort of flipped into Jim Crow. He felt like everything he had worked for was closing down. He came to Philadelphia and brought his wife and children. My grandmother's mother died when she was six in Philadelphia. She didn't remember her mother, but she did take over this business, which were rental properties that my grandfather had worked in with two people who said, we're going to get these properties, and when we finally pay off the mortgages, we will use the profits from that to, the will said, improve the Negro race. And that was the idea, was self-improvement. While my grandmother, and he didn't believe, by the way, Will Higgins did not believe that women should run businesses. But somehow or other, when he died, he left the trusteeship of that business to my grandmother. And the point was she was supposed to take 6 or 10%. And then after that, after the mortgages were paid off, do something to improve the race. During her time from after the Second World War until the 2000s, she gave away about 150 scholarships to African-American, at that time they were called Negro students, to go to colleges. She believes that was her purpose.
Is there a correlation then between her giving life and the length of time that Nana was on Earth?
You know, I wonder about that. I always wonder. I also know that the Bible tells us that sometimes evil flourishes. So I don't want to. I know there are a lot of great people who die young. Do you know what I mean? It feels to me that if you say the one is true, that it might in some way keep a little bit of hurt or shame on somebody who, you know, dies of breast cancer at 38. I'm not sure. Nana asked herself. She said, "Why am I still here?" I'm not sure, honestly. And I can't. My faith gives me hope and love. My faith gives me the duty to perform love. But it does not give me certainty that I know answers.
Wonderfully said. Lorraine, trying to look at cultural differences around the world, from the Chinese that cherish their elderly to other cultures that cast off their old parents to nursing homes, comment to us through the lens of lady sitting about why there's such cultural differences.
Well, you know, I don't know. We used to have a joke about my children had a book about the Yangtze River when it flooded, and everybody, there were pictures of the young people carrying their old grandparents on their backs. And we always said, "Oh, Nana, it's a good thing you lost that weight before you got old, because of the river floods, we're going to have to give you a piggyback." And she used to say, "Oh, honey, oh, God, don't let that happen." I think in our community, in the African-American community, often there wasn't much of a choice. There's also an idea that the elderly bring wisdom, bring help, bring ideas, bring actual work. I mean, on my mother's side, my great grandfather, and I keep him in that book because when you take care of somebody at the end of their life, it brings back to mind all the other elders in your life, right? And I remember Pap was almost blind, who came over from Barbados. And when something needed to be fixed, they'd say, "Pap, you need to get something." He said, "Oh, Lord, I can't see it. Bring me down. Let me touch the thing." He'd get him his toolbox. He'd spend all afternoon, and doggone if he hadn't fixed that thing by the time he got home from school. It was amazing. So the idea that you live till you die, I think, is part of it. And there's something we do where we've done something with the idea of retirement, and it's the end, and you sit around. But Nana certainly felt, Pap did, my grandmother did, that you live till you die. And what can I do? Which calls up a responsibility of our other members. Like, what can we do to help them live until they die? Because they've still got stuff to do, and we still have stuff to learn from them, to do with them. Now, I want to say, though, that we had resources, we had the ability to do it. So many people who are struggling don't have a room, don't have their bathroom isn't functioning. If you have to be out all day and you don't have the wherewithal even to do the paperwork to get somebody to help. I think there are a lot of ways that we could figure out to help people take care of their elders even more than we do.
Well, I agree with that. Lorraine, in Lady Sitters, you talk about tension. Advise our audience of how to deal with unresolved tension.
Oh, my. This, you're so right to go right from the last question to this, because this has to do with part of what's difficult about the caretaking and lady sitting or granddad sitting. It is really difficult if you've had a difficult relationship to figure out, and we didn't. Like, Nana and I did not have a particularly fraught relationship going into this. It was complicated, certainly. But there was lots of love and lots of the capacity to laugh and figure things out. On the other hand, Nana had not spoken to my father for about 7 years in their lives. So if you're taking seven, they had a seven-year freeze. Nana used to say, "We broke up." Those were the only language she had to talk about. It was like you use in a marriage. That it took them 7 years, and when they came back together, Nana said to him, "We're never going to talk about whatever happened. This is it. We're never going to." And I laughed with Nana. I said, "Nana, if it was me, I would go through 2 years of therapy with Daddy to figure out." And she didn't think that was funny. So I think for me, how to deal with tension was to get other help with it. My husband, friends, my sister was really a great, in our generation, we knew them, like making sure that whoever it is you talk to, you keep talking to, not to gossip, but to problem solve. The problem is I'm supposed to figure out how to give and receive love. Right now, I can't figure that out. Help me. And you ask that through prayer. You ask that through your relationships. And then when you can't figure it out, you just keep on doing what you know works, in the hope that sometime soon you're going to see how to do better. Because it's such a mashup of love and fear and worry and anger. At one point, in fact, when Nana was having lots of difficulty, when she didn't get enough oxygen to her brain, or she would have these moments which were not straight on dementia, but for a while she would not be, as she said, in her right mind. The hospice nurse gave us some gel. She wouldn't take any pills. She would a gel that you would rub on that would absorb into her skin, that would give her like a sedative or antipsychotic medicine that we'd get in a little bit. And she said, just, you know, when you're rubbing, you do her toes or rubbing her feet or rubbing her. Well, they never told me, and I didn't have the sense to know that I should wash my hands after putting that on. So she and I were in that room. At some point, I stayed in there with her for the week when she was most upset about everything. And I would put that on, and I slept on the couch, and I brought my computer. I did my work there. The two of us were just as loopy. Later, someone called me on the phone, and he was a dear friend who did advertising for us, actually, for my arts organization. And he said, you know, we were talking about marketing, our big 10th anniversary event. He said, I know your husband's a pastor, but if you need any help, someone to just talk with you, pray with you, I'm here. I burst into tears, right away, and didn't realize that I was being sedated along with her. It's so all the ways that we figure out how to deal with tension. You really need more help. That's my message. You look around. How can you get more help?
Mm-hmm. That makes your narrative even richer, because you were walking in the shoes and in the body of the patient, equally sedated. So it's almost like you took an insider's approach. That's priceless, Lorene. I've never heard any story such as that.
And when didn't know, really? I think it also brings back that it's about, we keep thinking about it using our minds, but it's so much about us in our bodies. And this, there's something your body knows about being close to someone. It's like I always said that the dog knew something. When Nana really got down to her last weeks and was in trouble and upset, you know, at one point they called me home. The hospice nurse had come. The lady who stayed with her called me and said, your Nana needs you. You have to come back from work. And I heard Nana screaming, Lorene! Lorene! I got home. She had put on one sock, one shoe. She was in her wheelchair. She was at the top of the stairs, like they were stopping her from, I don't know, what she was going to roll down the steps. And we had a chair rail, but she wasn't going to go to it. And it was after that that they decided to do the sedation. But that moment, getting home, after that, our dog stopped sleeping in our room and started sleeping in her room. And it was as if everybody, all the bodies, all the mammals, all the senses that we have, that we don't even know we have, are saying, uh-oh, time to keep watch.
Wow, that was so insightful. A couple of final questions for you. Given that you've gone through this experience, how would you like your final days to play out before your own homecoming?
Oh, my dear. I spent a lot of, there are Christian monks who have wonderful meditations for this, and I have spent some time doing that. I also have had these wonderful moments just doing yoga, where, mm-hmm. you know, all the blood rushes through and you, I think those ancient people did it, trying to clarify the mind. What's clear to me is I have no control. I have no control. Mm. And I just leave myself. I'm going to make some, try to make some arrangements so that it'll be easier for my children who don't live, you know, one's in Chicago, one's in Vermont, stepson's in Austin, Texas. So we've made arrangements so that if anything happens right here, we'll have some services to take care of us so that they don't have to like drop everything and leave like instantly in a panic, to give them a moment, mm-hmm. a little bit of time. So I've tried to do that, but I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the plan is for me. And I learned from Nana to try not to control it, to be ready spiritually, mm-hmm. to try to be ready with my folks, but whom I love. I don't know. My Aunt Emily, who was paralyzed when she was in her 30s, lived into her 60s. At the end, my grandmother took care of her after my grandmother died and couldn't any longer. Because she needed help all the time, her daughter had to work. She was in a nursing home very close to the house. My cousin went to see her every day. We went down probably every week or so. It was an hour drive from us. My Aunt Emily made herself a community wherever she went. She could not talk well. She could not walk. But she would scoot her wheelchair over to the nurse's station. She'd listen to all the gossip. She'd answer them. Sometimes somebody would say, "What happened? They're over in room 32. And Aunt Emily would say, like, they said, "Oh, Emily, what happened over there?" So they want to check what happened in room 32. Like, no matter where she went, she made community. I learned something from that. So sometimes we say, "Oh, you put in a nursing home, you're just like." I learned from Aunt Emily about community. And if I find myself somewhere, if I have any part of my mind left, what I should do to do the same thing I'm supposed to do now, give and receive love wherever I am.
It is about giving and receiving love wherever you are. I mean, that's it. That's the big magic. That's the one thing. Lorene, thank you so much for being on our Success Made to Last show today. I've done almost 3,000 shows, and I've said this one other time at the end of an interview. I just love you. And I love the life lessons that you've drawn from Lady Sitting. Well done, Lorene Carey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And the love that pours back. Bless you. Thank you so much, Rick.
Well, that was Lorene Carey. We are so appreciative of her being on our show today. Such a beautiful book, Lady Sitters. Make Lady Sitting My Year with Nana at the End of Her Century. Make sure and purchase this book. Share it with others. We think it's one of those seminal books that will make such a difference. We think you'll see it in your own life. You'll see members of your family through the book. And it is just timeless and priceless in our judgment. I'm Rick Tocchini. Thanks for joining us on Success Made to Last. As we always say, may you move from ordinary to extraordinary. And thanks again to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, for their longstanding support of this network. Have a great week. Again, thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, "Mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy." They also say, "Crunch tacos, not abs." And, "Psst, you're crazy" is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is Life is Short, Lick the Bowl. If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.